So no base pay, only tips, and I just show up and I play for 3 hours. I showed up, I performed for 3 hours. I made $3, dude. $3. I went home and I cried and I was like, this is never gonna work. I'm never gonna make like a living doing music. And I literally almost gave up. I almost completely gave up. And that could have been like the turning point for me. If I just gave up there,
right,
I would have missed out on all of this.
Right, dude, that's...
Yeah.
Living on $245,000 a year in Anaheim, California. So this is Moses Lin, a 29-year-old college dropout who went from food stamps to making $245K per year. Despite the rest of his family members going against his dream of pursuing music, Moses knew he had a passion and he wanted to chase it. So today he absolutely crushes it by playing music at weddings all over Southern California and across the world. And he also has 4 rental properties with a goal to reach financial freedom by the time he's 30. We had a super amazing chat. He definitely has a very big entrepreneurial spirit. And yeah, so today we have Moses with us to talk about how he did it, his advice, and how you can start your own business doing what you love. And with that being said, let's get into the interview. All right, so Moses, tell me a little bit more about yourself and your whole story of like how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so after high school, I joined the Marines. So that was kind of like my big first like risk-taking venture. So essentially, my parents had no money saved up for my college, and it was either go to college, be hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and start my life off that way, or I figured out that I could join the Marines and they'd pay for my college. You essentially risk it, you do 4 years, hopefully nothing bad happens, and then you get out and you get free college. And so that was kind of the path that I took. So I got stationed in California, ended up auditioning for the Marine Corps band. I got to perform guitar for 4 years, which is really cool. Gained a lot of skills there. And then when I got out, I went to college, did my free college. Funny story, I did 3.5 years. I was like 1 semester from graduating, dropped out, decided to start my business doing music, and kind of built that up to becoming a full-time performer. And then things just kind of started growing in a really crazy way that I never expected. So I started out performing for, you know, maybe like $200 for a gig. Now I'm charging about $4,000 to $6,000 for a gig. And wow. I have clients that are flying me all over the country, internationally. I perform for celebrities, politicians, you know, stuff like that. Honestly, sometimes it doesn't even feel like it's my life. I feel like I'm like watching my life unfold, especially when the CNBC thing came out. I was like, oh my God, is this even my life anymore? What's happening? So I'm very grateful all the time that I get to live this life, because I never thought I'd be anywhere close to doing this.
Dude, how has your life changed since that video came out on CNBC?
You know, it's kind of funny because it really hasn't. It's press fluff. Like, people are like, oh my God, it's so cool. There's this one tweet that went viral. I don't know if you saw it. Some girl posted this tweet and she was like, this man makes $245K as a wedding guitarist. Nothing you know about life is real. Go do whatever the f*** you want. And it like blew the f*** up. Like, people are sharing everywhere. Every meme site is posting it. All my friends are like tagging me in every single one. Like, oh my God, Moses, ha ha ha. And I'm like, cool, right? As far as like clients that reach out, very little impact. No one so far has been like, oh, we want to hire you for a wedding. We saw you on CNBC. No one. I will say one interesting that's happened. I did get a lot of musicians starting to reach out all over the country, like internationally even. And they're like, how are you doing what you're doing? Like, can we sign up for like a coaching session? We'd love to pay you. And I've never considered coaching.
You should.
But yes, I know. So literally I was like, okay, fine, $500 an hour, right? Whatever. And I threw it out there. I booked like 4 sessions within like 4 days. It's crazy.
Dude,
so wow. Now I'm like building out like a coaching section on my website for people to sign up, and like building out like, I guess, a curriculum of some sort. I feel like that's one thing that I'm really passionate about, is that I see a lot of musicians that are very talented with very little business experience. There's really no one in the musician space that's helping musicians with like business.
So I want to backtrack. How did you get into music, and how good do you have to be at, you know, singing or whatever to do what you do?
So I started very young. In like middle school, I picked up violin. High school, I picked up guitar. I kind of decided guitar was like my instrument, and then been playing guitar since. And so that's maybe, I don't know, 15, 16 years, something like that.
Okay.
So music has been my whole life. As far as how talented you have to be to make money, I would honestly say not that talented. The thing is that there's like this misconception. So like, musicians are artists. So we're all these like perfectionists. We're like, oh my God, I have to practice to be perfect. And yes, like if you're a musician, you're watching this, go home, practice. Like always be improving. But I'd say when it comes to making great music, yes, practice. When it comes to making money, marketing. You have to build a business. And I always tell people, I'm a businessman first and a musician second. If I had half the talent, in music, I can still make dumb amounts of money because I know how to market myself, right? And so you have to think, right, what do people want to hear? How do they want to like create this experience? What kind of experience are you creating for people?
I think that's really good for people to know, because I think a lot of people struggle with like self-doubt or fears. Like, I might not be good enough, right? Like, I'm not the best singer or musician in the world. So they don't think they should get paid or deserve to get paid for performing. But like, there's obviously like a minimum like talent level you have to be, right? But I think far more people are at that level than they would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said marketing is the big part. So how do you market yourself?
So when I say marketing, I mean a lot of like personal branding, brand image, what people think of when they think of you, how you make them feel, right? So for example, my marketing a lot centers around the fact that when I perform at a wedding, your guests will go crazy. So I post these videos of me, I'm at cocktail hour performing, guests are dancing, they're singing, they're like, oh my God, like the couple runs in to cocktail hour, and couples don't come to cocktail hour. Let's start there, right? Couples, they take their photos during cocktail hour and they come to reception. My couples, they all come to cocktail hour because they're like, oh my God, we want to see Moses. And then they run to cocktail hour, they run straight to me. They ignore all their guests, they run straight to me. We dance, we party, we have this moment. And that's like, that's the experience. So I sell the experience. Like, yes, I'm talented. Like, there's a lot going on musically that's happening, but that's not why people book me. They book me because I make them feel a certain way. You know, I see guests crying at ceremony. Like, before the ceremony even starts, I'm playing music. They're freaking crying, dude, because of the emotions, right? The vibes. And then a cocktail hour, people are singing, they're dancing. It's a whole vibe. And that's kind of what it is. People have to know exactly what they're getting. And so that's kind of my marketing approach, my branding strategy.
Got it. So you create a super great experience for the client on their big day, right? Can you take me through your whole marketing strategy for your business on how you get clients? I'm assuming word of mouth is a big one, but
like my lead generation. I feel like it's changed a lot over the years. So when I started, it was a lot of SEO. So I got really lucky early on. One of my first wedding couples, I like looked him up. He was the director of SEO at like DoorDash and a couple of the big companies. So after his wedding, he reached out. He was like, oh my God, you're just so good. Like, we're so great. I was like, thank you so much. And I was like, hey, do you think I could pick your brain about SEO sometime? He's like, yeah, totally. I got you. Right. So we like set up a call and he gave me all these tips. I like took so many notes. And essentially, I went back in, I used all of his notes, I recoded my entire website, kind of did everything, and I like built this SEO strategy. And that was really big for me early on. So I did get very lucky like meeting him. Again, for most people, you can find all that stuff online. It was more that he made me aware that SEO existed, and that was really important. So essentially, right now, I've gotten to the point where I rank for a lot of searches. So if you search like Orange County Wedding Guitarist, I rank number one most of the times. And most of the cities that I perform in, so like New York Wedding Guitarist, Cancun Wedding Guitars, Hawaii Wedding Guitars, a lot of those I rank one or two. And so I get a lot of people finding me just naturally through that.
And this is all organic, right? Like, it's not.
It's all organic. I've never paid a cent for SEO. It's all like me coding backend, and it's also a lot of backlinks. So one benefit that I have as a musician, you know, musicians don't have a lot of opportunities for backlinks. So I outrank a lot of my competition very easily. I have a lot of endorsements from companies. Like, I'm endorsed by like Bose. I'm endorsed by like Ernie Ball, a lot of other companies. And so these backlinks essentially are from these like heavy hitter websites. They boost me a lot more. And so I naturally just very easily outrank my other musician competitors.
How do you get those backlinks? What was your strategy?
Very early on, I reached out to a lot of music companies. It's like, oh, I want free gear. You know, like I want to be endorsed. I want, you know, free capos and strings and stuff like that. So I reached out to a bunch of people and I got endorsements. And I started realizing the most important part of an endorsement, at least for me, isn't the free stuff, because what, I save $200 on strings a year, that's nothing, right? The most important part is getting a backlink on their website. So there's a lot of musician companies that will list their endorsed artists and link their website.
Okay.
So I started strategically reaching out to different companies for that. The way I landed Bose was I'd been using a Bose system for a couple of years, and then I went to, are you familiar with the NAMM show?
No.
The NAMM show it's like the music trade show. Every year it's at the Anaheim Convention Center, 100,000 attendees, global audience. Every person in the music industry who's someone shows up there. So every famous artist shows up, every company shows up. And so I went to the Bose booth and I was like, hey guys, I was an artist this year. And so I talked to them like, hey, like, this is what I do. This is who I am. Like, I'm kind of big in the local scene here. I'd love to talk about, you know, some kind of partnership. They looked at my stuff. They were like, yeah, we love it. We want you to become one of our artists. And they started sending me sound systems. So they sent me like 3 different sound systems to like test out, get my feedback on, and I got to keep them. And so now I use these at all my weddings.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, it just blows my mind that like I didn't think backlinks and SEO was that important, but it makes a lot of sense. That's how you rank, right? Like a lot of your people finding you are from, they're searching with intent to hire someone and they see you.
Over time, I've developed a really strong network in like SoCal. So more and more of my weddings now are from like direct referrals from like wedding planners or other people in the industry. So right now, like I'm on a few wedding planners preferred vendors list. Some wedding venues actually have me on their list. So everyone that goes there to like, you know, tour, give them the list and I'm on it. I have a lot of natural referrals now kind of built up.
So venues and wedding planners, those are like the big ones.
Those are the big ones.
Do you have any strategies for like getting on their good side or like getting
just
on
crush it? Right. When I show up to a wedding and I crush it, the wedding planner naturally is like, wow, this guy's great. I want to work with him again. And so I think just very natural networking in that sense of people getting to know your work.
Okay, so for someone that is good at music, good at singing, and they want to do something that like what you're doing, what would you tell them to do? Like, can you lay out sort of like a game plan, like a 6-month game plan and then maybe like a 3-year game plan for them?
Oh man, you're taking all my coaching content. Now no one's going to hire. I'm just kidding. This will be the crash course.
Yes.
So 6-month game plan, if you have no experience. So this is kind of what I did at the very beginning when I had no gigs. You want content, so people have to be able to see what you can do. So put out 3 YouTube videos, full songs, you performing. People want to see what you do, how good you are. After that, when I first started, I made a list of every restaurant, hotel, or you know, area that did live music. So like shopping malls, any place that did live music. Made a list of every place within like a 50-mile radius. I cold called every single one of them, like dozens every day. Cold call, cold email. Hey, can I talk to your general manager? Can I talk to your director of food and beverage? Can I talk to whoever books your live music? Hey, can I send you a video? I'd love to be on your list. I'd love to perform from here. Blah, 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 blah. Just blast everyone. Because at that point, you're just trying to do volume. You're trying to book anything.
Right.
And so, like now I don't do that, right? Because I don't need to do as much volume. But that really works at the beginning. So, you know, it's a numbers game. You know, if you get a 10% response rate, you email 100 places, you're going to get 10 responses. 10 responses, 1 gig, right? That just means you have to email 1,000 in order to get 10 gigs. So you just keep going.
It's okay to get rejections, right? Like you've been rejected thousands of times, probably.
Thousands. You just get used to it.
Where you
like
are
it
now.
It doesn't bother me anymore. When people are like, oh, sorry, like we actually decided to book a string quartet. I'm not offended at all. I'm like, okay, that's the vibe you're going for. Cool.
I remember when I was print modeling after I graduated college, and I would get rejected so much. And I think it's just part of the game, right? If you're not doing something that has the ability to get rejected or, you know, fail or whatever, then I feel like you're not getting outside of your comfort zone enough. And
I think that's really what sets apart people like us, like entrepreneurs, is that we have a really high tolerance for rejection. Like when you fail, do you quit or does it fuel you? Does it drive you? Do you learn from it? You're like, okay, what did I do wrong? What can you do better? And it drives you to keep going. A lot of people didn't believe in me. They're like, oh, are you sure you want to drop out of college? And I was like, watch me. And it was kind of like that drove me. I was like, I'm going to prove you wrong.
I love that. Yeah. So for anyone watching this video, try and do things that give you the ability to get rejected. Like think of failure as totally okay. It's part of the process. Now I feel like every time we fail at something or we get rejected, we learn. And then ultimately at some point, like some of the wins and successes will get you to where you want to get.
Exactly. Like Charlie, how many videos did you put out before your first one went viral?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, that was probably 50. How many videos?
Probably.
So essentially, you have to put out 50 videos. You have to fail at 50 videos before you get one viral. And people are so obsessed with like, oh, the first video has to be perfect. It's like, no, just throw out 50 trash ones, learn, and then the 51st will probably go viral. And people don't do the reps.
Yeah, they like will fail once and then be like, okay, it wasn't meant for me, right? But man, especially for all these things where there's like more competition or it's like you have to just do it a lot. And that's why I tell people, like, if you're passionate about something, that's a huge advantage because you'll probably need to do it for a while consistently without losing interest for you to start seeing traction, and then you'll be successful at it.
Yeah, my first gig ever, this is like before I even thought about performing. I was like teaching guitar lessons. I didn't really consider performing as like income. I had a coffee shop reach out to me. They're like, oh, we love your music. We'd love to have you perform. Can you come here? And you know, we'll put out a tip jar and we'll give you free coffee. I was like, okay, cool, whatever, right? So no base pay, only tips. And I just show up and I play for 3 hours. I showed up, I performed for 3 hours. I made $3, dude. $3. I literally, man. I went home and I cried and I was like, this is never going to work. I'm never going to make like a living doing music. And I literally almost gave up. I almost completely gave up. And that could have been like the turning point for me. If I just gave up there,
right,
I would have missed out on all of this.
Right. Dude, that's also, yeah. $3 after playing for that long.
Dude.
That is definitely soul crushing.
It's soul crushing, dude.
Man. But you got out of that.
I did.
So for social media, what do you think people should do if they want to get their music out there? Like, what platform should they be on? What types of content should they make? How consistently should they be posting? All that stuff.
Yeah. I think it's really important to distinguish just like two types of musicians. So there's like two kind of tracks that most musicians go on. And so for me, I go the live performance route. Everything I play is a cover. I don't put out original music. I'm targeting weddings, private events, right? The other track is you're putting out original music on Spotify, you're trying to build up your fan base, you're trying to, you know, do shows, work with other artists, songwrite, your goal is to, you know, put out albums, go on tour, you know, get booked for concerts. Like, there's like two completely separate routes. And sometimes if you do both, they can help each other. But as far as the wedding side of things, it's really different how you approach social media. So for me, a lot of it's Instagram, and I used to do YouTube more regularly. So on YouTube, I will put out like music videos, and that was like really good for a while, but I started realizing that, you know, a music video is kind of fake. Like, everyone knows, like, it's not a live performance, you know, and it's pre-recorded, it's edited. And when you look at a music video, you don't really know if the person can perform live. Like, live has so many other logistics. Like, you have live sound, you have mixing, you have audio, you have all this stuff going on. Like, is the live sound going to sound good? Because everyone sounds good in a studio.
Right.
Right? Not everyone sounds good live. And so I started posting more live videos, like, at actual weddings.
Okay.
So my feed is almost entirely videos taken at weddings of, like, certain moments. And I think one thing that a lot of musicians do wrong is their Instagram is a lot of like really good pictures of themselves or pictures of them performing. And honestly, no one cares how good you look when you perform. It's kind of a weird thing. It's like, we don't care how good you look or how good these pictures are. We want to know how you sound. And so I really think musicians should be posting almost exclusively videos, you know, unless you have like a photo taken by some famous photographer, you want a feed full of videos. So people know exactly what they're getting.
So we're talking like Instagram Reels, right?
Yeah. Reels are big.
Okay. Do you repost your Instagram Reels onto TikTok and YouTube Shorts?
I don't do YouTube Shorts. I repost them on TikTok. I only recently started TikTok, maybe like 6 months ago. So it's like very slowly growing. I had like one go viral. I think it was like, I was playing like a Disney song, and that one, you know, obviously Disney stuff always goes viral. I only do Disney when a client like specifically asks for it, because I used to play at Disneyland, so I do have some Disney repertoire. But yeah, that one went semi-viral, but everything else has been kind of like, you know, TikTok's hard.
Okay, got it. So you'd suggest people, if they want to build like a niche music business like this, post videos on Instagram Reels, and then I always say like repurpose for TikTok, right? Since you
create the content,
you might as well. You want to be as like omnipresent as possible. And besides that, do you like have a lead gen form from social media, or like how do you?
Oh yeah, I link to my website. There's a contact form that links to my CRM, and it all gets kind of onboarded from there. You got to get out of like the musician mindset. So a lot of musicians are in this like bubble where everyone they follow, everyone they talk to is a musician. Their idols are all musicians. They're like, oh, I want to be like this artist, or like, and so they like follow these footsteps, but they stay trapped in this bubble, right? So like, as I said before, I'm a businessman first. So instead of listening to all these musicians, you need to open up your learning to business people, right? So you want to learn from business people. You want to watch these videos, you know? Even stuff like personal finance from you, or like Grant Cardone, like all these people that have like big ideas, like Gary Vee. Like, listen to these people, learn how to build a business, and that's going to help you so much more than like following just random musicians.
Right. How do you meet people?
I go to a lot of networking events. So there's a lot of like local networking events in like OC and LA, specifically for wedding vendors. And then I recently started going to this one, it's like a summit, it's called Engage. And Engage is like the luxury wedding, it's a convention essentially. So I went to one in New Orleans, it was in June, and like registration was like $4,500. You know, and then it was at the Ritz, so that's another $1,000 to stay there, right? And the flights. But everyone there is like working luxury weddings. As you grow, your networks naturally change. The people that you might have been on the same level with, you might not be anymore, right? And they might not be able to refer you as much. So for example, right. like if someone that I used to work with a lot, if now that I've raised my pricing considerably, the people, the type of wedding that they work and the people that they would refer me for, those clients can't really afford me. And so right. even though they might refer me for every single wedding, not many of them will book. So that, that referral source becomes less useful to me. And so I need to find more people at a certain network level to continue to grow.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So your network can help. It can also hold you back. Yeah.
Has your ROI been positive on like investing into these networking experiences and things like that?
I think so. I think it will be. I have a good feeling about it.
I think long-term for any type of like networking, I'm super big on like your network and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like long-term, pretty much any amount of money you invest into it is going to be positive. If you don't get a positive ROI with networking, then you're probably just like, you're probably meeting people, but not like creating a meaningful relationship or—
I totally agree.
Or like, yeah. No.
There's, yeah. there's also this other one that I have a real estate investor, like friend, who's part of one called GoBundance. And that's one that I'm really interested in joining. You have to have $1 million net worth to join. So I'm not there yet. So maybe in about a year or two, I'll be there. It's like, I think it's like 10K a year to join. And okay. you can check it out. I was about 10K to join. They do like all these like trips and essentially like people come together and they just like do real estate deals or like other deals.
GoBundance, so you said?
Yeah, GoBundance. And then, so essentially I was talking to one guy that's been in it for years and he was like, you know, it's 10K to join. And he was like, my first time going to a thing, I did a deal where I made 50K in like a couple months.
Yeah.
He was like, that paid for 5 years. Yeah. And I was like, you know, so it's like some dude just came to the table, was like, hey, I got a deal. I need investors. People slap down money. They do the deal. Everyone cashes out, you know, in a couple months and everyone wins. Honestly, I love that concept because it's like at any point in your life, meeting one person can change your entire life. For example, I go to this, you know, wedding thing and I meet one wedding planner that works 500K weddings and she loves me and she books me for every wedding she does. My income is going to double or triple overnight, right? It's amazing, right? So like you go to these things, you meet that one person that's like, how's this young kid in here with all of us like, you know, older guys making $1 million a year and then he just like gives you all these deals and you do all these things, right?
I was going to say, yeah, it's like it's a tale-driven world and
it's a what?
Tale-driven world. I read this somewhere and I was like, oh, this is like this makes a lot of sense. Basically, a lot of your earnings are going to come from like a very small percentage of things, right? So like the thing you were saying, if you met a wedding planner that does 500K weddings, your chances of meeting someone like that are pretty small. But if you meet one person like that, it has like such a big impact on your business. I tell people like, you just need to always be like searching and be like opportunistic or however you say that word. And soon you'll find people like that or those tail events. And that's just going to like catapult your business.
Oh, absolutely. It's like the 80-20 rule, right? Yeah. So like 80% of your income comes from 20% of your contacts or 20% of your sources. Yeah.
For musicians out there that are watching this, I'm sure we have a ton of talented people that can sing or play piano, guitar, whatever. Do you think it's important for them to niche down into something like what you do?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. How would you go about it?
So you have niches and then you have also like what the market is looking for, right? So there's musicians that are like, oh, I play guitar, bass, drums, I sing, I can do, you know, it's like you need to pick one thing. You got to be the master at one thing. And the goal is that when you're doing sales and you're targeting it, you want people to like, this is like a sales thing. So the client has to know that you have exactly what they need, right? Not that you can do what they need, it's that you are exactly what they need. So, for example, if you're like, you know, I'm looking for a guitarist, and I'm like, well, I play piano, I sing, I can also do drums, I have a photo booth, and I can also play guitar. You're kind of like, I don't know, like this guy does too much stuff. If you're like, I'm looking for a fingerstyle guitarist that performs wirelessly and has an engaging performance, I'm your guy. That is exactly what I do. So I've like niched it down super narrow, like fingerstyle guitar covers of pop songs at your wedding, right? Yeah. That's me. So the more you can create that feeling in a client that is like, this person does exactly what I need, the higher your chances of booking them are. They're not like, can he
higher
do it?
Can... And exactly. You can probably charge more.
Exactly, because you're specialized. You're not just a musician, you're a very specific type of musician. So definitely niche down. And then also like depending on what the market demands. So for example, right now it's a really hard time to be a singer-songwriter because there's so many of them. So unfortunately, if you sing and play the guitar and you're just strumming chords, there's a lot of competition, you know? So you could maybe do fingerstyle, you know, as you sing, or you could get a lot of really cool equipment where you're doing like harmonizers with your vocals and stuff like that. But that's a really hard musician category to be in. The categories that do really well right now are instrumental guitarists like me. You have saxophone players. You have violinists. So a lot of sax and violin players will play pop music. They'll play like the melody and they'll have a backing track for the rest of the song. Okay. And those do really well right now. You know, string quartets always do well. That's like a very classic wedding thing. So it really depends. Like you got to find out, what does the market need? Can I give it to them? And two, how do I specialize so people know that I'm exactly what they need?
I love that. Yeah. I have a friend that had an SEO marketing agency and they're just like general broad agency and they weren't doing well. Then they focus down on like a very specific niche, like super specific for certain types of companies, and their business like took off. So I think that's like such a great takeaway from this interview is like if you can like get creative and niche down, that's gonna have such a big impact on your success, right?
Oh yeah, I have an SEO friend who was like, yeah, we're struggling, and then we decided to do SEO for dentist offices, and I was like, why? It's like just cause, and then they like blew up. They make so much money. Right.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah. So like, if you go to my website, it's just like weddings, 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 weddings. It's like, like every now and then I guess someone's like, oh, can you play at my birthday party? Or can you do this corporate event? It's like, of course I can, right? But that's not what I'm targeting.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you're very specific with your targeting. Like you want to be known as, like when people think wedding guitarist, right? Oh, I think of Moses. Right?
Yep.
Can you take me through your, like a typical day for you? Like how, what do you do every single day?
A typical, like today I'm working, right? I wake up at like nine. Okay. So I I roll out of bed around 9:30. And I used to try to wake up really early. I feel like when I would do that, like, you know, military is very much 4 a.m. club. So I did that for years and I have sleep apnea. So it's really hard for me to wake up early. I'm just like groggy and tired all day. So I figured out I just work really late, like until I fall asleep, and then I just sleep until when I'm rested, and that way I don't have to like nap during the day. So I wake up around like 9:30. I make an espresso. I have an espresso machine, so I love coffee. So pull an espresso, a lot of emails, client meetings, every now and then a coaching session. So usually on a work day I'll have, you know, maybe 3 or 4 meetings, a lot of emails. And then from there, my various projects are, you know, like right now I'm in the process of recording a new album. So like this is my recording studio, like that's a sound panel. I got like 6 sound panels around here. So I built these myself. So that was another project too. So
nice.
These are my sound panels. And then other projects, you know, depending on what it is, I have various things to do. You know, I also have a lot of real estate to attend to. So I'm either looking for new deals, analyzing new deals, talking to my property manager. And then, yeah, I practice guitar a lot. Yeah, it's kind of a typical day.
Can you tell us how you got into real estate?
Yeah, so during the pandemic, right around, you know, when everything crashed, I essentially lost all of my gigs. I had maybe like 20 canceled weddings within a week. Everyone was trying to get their money back. I had clients threatening to sue me. And essentially, I lost all my income overnight and had to figure out some way to make some kind of cash flow. So I was sitting on a good amount of cash. And so my at the time, I was trying to buy a duplex in Orange. So I was trying to do a house hack. And so I was under contract on a duplex. It was like $1.1 million. I was going to live in one, rent out the other. And then when the pandemic hit, my mortgage lender backed out. You know, we were like in escrow and he backed out. He's like, we can't approve you anymore because our policies have changed. So I called like 7 lenders. I was like, first one to approve this gets it. None of them could do it. And so I lost the deal. And I was like, I need to buy something. I need to find some kind of cash flow. So I started looking at out-of-state investing, ended up buying a property in Little Rock, Arkansas. And so it was, 120K cash flowed about $500 a month. And that really helped me a lot, just that cash flow. So I bought that May of 2020-ish. And then I bought a second one maybe 5 months later. So as soon as that was like renovated, rented out, I was looking for the next one. I bought a second one. And so that was giving me about maybe $1,000 a month of cash flow. And then since then, you know, I've bought 2 more. And so now I have 4 properties all rented out. It's doing pretty well.
Yeah, it sounds like you're crushing it with it. What made you want to get into real estate? And do you have any tips for people that want to also diversify into that?
Yeah, I think real estate has always been something I want to get into. Like when I think about it, like, real estate is like the only way that people have built generational wealth, like, over, you know, last 1,000 years. It's the way. Like, yep. Stocks grow, yes, but assets, like real assets, real estate grows, and that's how you build generational wealth. I never thought I would make enough money to be able to afford real estate. And so when I started making, I think I first hit six figures in 2019, and that's when I was like, oh my God, I think I make enough money to buy real estate. And then I started kind of like looking more into it. And so 2020 is when I first jumped into it. And I definitely think with real estate, it's like most things. Like, it's really scary. There's a lot of stuff going on that you don't understand. And that fear usually holds people back, where they're like, I need to learn. I need to read every book. I need to make sure I do the right thing. And that kind of paralysis, just you waste years on it and it never happens. Right. And so really it's my personal philosophy has always been jump and then learn how to swim.
I love that.
Yeah. Which is ironically what I did in the military, because I didn't know how to swim. And I went to boot camp and they had a swim qualification. So I literally dove maybe like 30, 40 feet into a pool and had to learn how to swim. So, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of like my life mantra, is like, you have to know like just enough to not be like super dumb. But at the end of that, like on the job learning,
right?
You do it.
You're not like over-preparing.
Exactly. Because when you're in it, now you're forced to learn at a very accelerated rate, because you have capital invested.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. So for anyone watching this, like if you're trying to do something, but you're just scared to do it, or you feel like you need to prepare more, just do it. And then,
yeah,
like if you really want it, you'll learn along the way, right? You're mm-hmm. forced to do it. It's literally like it's like a surefire way to avoid procrastination and overanalyzation, whatever it's called.
Yeah. And it goes back to what we were saying about failure earlier, because people are so afraid of failure, so they don't do things. But failure is the best way to learn. So by avoiding failure, you're actually avoiding education.
That's true.
So best case scenario, you win. Worst case scenario, you learn a very, very good lesson. And it only costs you probably $1,000 or something like that.
Yeah. How are you going to grow your business from here on out? Like your music business?
That's a hard one, dude. Honestly, like, I don't know any musicians that charge as much as I do. And I'm not trying to say that in a cocky way. Like, if anyone's watching this video and they are my price tier, I would love to connect with you and like chat. And then we can like brainstorm how we can both grow. But it's hard, because I feel like there's so many spaces where there's like people above you to learn from, right? So like in the wedding photographer space, for example, there's like some really big names of people that like charge $50,000 for a wedding. And every photographer like looks up to them, they can learn from them. There's like workshops and webinars. I don't feel like there really is anything like that for me. So it's really hard, because I feel like a lot of my business, I've been trailblazing, where I feel like I have to innovate or make the next step. And there's no one that I can really, you know, look to as a mentor. And so that's kind of been an obstacle for me. And so sometimes it's hard to know like, okay, how do I scale? How do I grow? Like, is my growth just charging more money? You know, I mean, sure. But how do I innovate?
What platforms do you use that help you run your business?
Oh, yeah. I use a CRM, client relationship manager, called Dubsado. And that's really good. A lot of wedding vendors use it. It's really good for like onboarding clients, having templates and stuff like that, automating things. That's really great. I have the whole Adobe suite for like my video, photo editing, all that stuff like that. Calendly for scheduling meetings.
Calendly, okay.
So what else do I use? Dropbox, obviously, iCloud storage.
How do you take payments?
So my client, my CRM will do it. So I link Stripe to my CRM, and it's great because I don't take credit card payments, because I don't want to pay the fee. So with the CRM, people can pay with like a bank payment, and it's a $5 flat fee for me. So if it's $5,000, it's still $5, which is amazing.
Yeah, 3% on 5K is like, that's big.
Dude, yeah. So like I'll have like six, or like even with like travel, like destination stuff, like it can be like up to like 8K. So like 3% on 8K is like $250. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, that's huge. Yeah. That's smart. So wait, when you're traveling for these gigs, how does that work? Do they pay for everything, or how many days of your life does it take and stuff like that?
So typically, like, let's say it's a Saturday wedding. I'll fly out Friday, because you always want to fly the day before in case there's like a delay, or your baggage is lost, you know, all that stuff like that, or like you can't get a rental car. You definitely don't want to fly in the day of. So fly in the day before, and then I do the wedding, and then the next day in the afternoon I'll fly back. So essentially I create a quote where I charge them for a round trip flight with additional baggage for my equipment, two nights at a hotel, cost of a rental car, and then I estimate, you know, like you got like gas if it's a really far drive for the car, and then like
sort of itemize everything, right?
Yeah, if the hotel has like a parking fee, then I add that in there too. So they have just like a lump travel fee that I charge them.
Okay.
They could just add to the whole invoice. And then sometimes it's like a cool place, like I'll charge them based on that, and then I'll just like book a longer stay like after that to like, you know, explore the city, have some fun, like have a little mini vacation. But I don't charge them for that.
On the day of the weddings, how many hours are you like actually actively playing?
Actively playing about an hour and a half. Typically, like a wedding, I'll do about 30 minutes before the ceremony as like guests arriving, getting seated. And then I'll do, you know, 1 to 3 songs at the beginning as everyone's walking down the aisle. Right. And then one song at the end. So usually that's about 30 to 40 minutes of total playtime. And then after that, we go straight to cocktail hour and do a full hour there. So it's usually about an hour and a half, give or take, of music.
Dude, that's amazing. And then you just leave sort of after the cocktail hour?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Dang.
Yeah.
That's a high-paying gig.
Yeah, the hourly breakdown is really the hourly nice number to
obviously
look at.
There's way more prep and stuff. So for people that want to, you know, learn more about your business or want like advice or coaching and stuff, like how can they reach you?
Yeah, so my Instagram is at Moses Lynn Music. Pretty much that's everywhere. So that's my website too, moseslynnmusic.com. If you want to reach out for coaching or a wedding, I have a contact form on my website for both of those. You can reach out there. If you want to book for a wedding, you want a coaching session, I got you. Instagram is where I'm most active, so that's where I'm, you know, posting stories and content. And I'm also on Spotify. So if you want to listen on Spotify, I have music up there too.
Can you leave the audience with one last like message or something that you want to tell them?
Yeah. How I like to approach life is I like to imagine my ideal life and what it looks like, right? So my ideal life, like I mentioned earlier, sleeping in every single day. That is a value. That's important to me. Mm-hmm. That's my best life. Sleeping in every day, imagine your best life and then work backwards to get there. Figure that out and make very small steps backwards because everything's possible. We're in this like beautiful age of information and you're watching this video for free on YouTube. You have all these people like Charlie that's making millions of dollars, that's telling you all this free information. It's so easy to learn and so easy to grow and you can really make anything happen. You just have to have the drive. And it's really great to just take steps, like micro steps. So every day, like, what is one step that I can take in that direction? And you'll get there.
Dude, I love that. Super inspirational. I feel like you talked about so many, like, really game-changing pieces of advice and stuff. And I think the audience is going to love this interview because you just threw a lot of gems out there that should not be free. Cool. Thank you so much, Moses.
Absolutely.
Appreciate your time.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Anyways, I hope you guys got some great value out of this episode. If you guys did, I'd love to ask you for a quick favor. If you could just take 30 seconds and write us a review on whatever platform you are listening to this on, that would help us immensely. Plus, the more reviews we get, the more this podcast is going to be pushed out and the more free value we can give other people. Anyways, I appreciate your time, you guys, and I'll see you in the next episode. Peace.